Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, here we are again on Circles of Change. Thanks for joining us out there, folks. I'm speaking now shortly with Bruce Frankel, a colleague that is really based out of New York, but I think he's hiding out in colder Massachusetts. Welcome to the line, Bruce.
Hi, Zara. How are you?
Just
thanks
great.
Very
well,
much.
Give us a snow report. What's it like out there?
It's unbelievable. There are mounds and mounds of snow. There are about 2 or 2.5 feet on the ground. They're expecting some more snow tonight. There are icicles that look like we're growing into an ice cave in the house that I'm at. And in the parking lots, there are snowbanks that are like 12 feet high, I think.
Well, you know,
I should have my skis with me.
I was going to say, but you know, as a rider, you're seeking refuge. You're away from the hustle bustle of the city. I've got to believe that's an element of tranquility that's going to help you.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's, you know, really quite beautiful. I look out onto a pond that's like Golden Pond, and just the woods and watching the deer walk through the snow. They look a little like pygmy deer because their legs are so deeply embedded
that's
in the
right.
snow as they walk, but it's quite beautiful and wonderful.
Well, great. Well, let me reintroduce those who don't recall. Bruce, this is his second time coming here on the show. We're going to talk specifically about his new book, What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life? True Stories of Finding Success, Passion, and New Meaning in the Second Half of Life. Before I go there, just a quick introduction. He's actually co-writer of the World War II History's Greatest Conflict in Pictures. In 2001, it was a New York Times bestseller. He spent several years with People magazine, also a national news reporter at the New York for USA Today. A variety of things to his credit, a lifelong love of learning. He went back and got a Master of Fine Arts in Poetry from Franklin and Marshall College. Previously had a degree in government in 1971 time frame. So he's been in all corners of the United States, traveled around the world, now based out of New York. He's a father of three sons and having the time of his life now, having given birth to this book that really resonates with people from a variety of generations. So in general, Bruce, has it caught you off guard, the response you've gotten to your book?
I wouldn't say that it's caught me off guard so much as it's delighted me. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I kind of had a feeling, to be honest, when I started work on it that it was going to find a wide and grateful audience, because when I first began to report the stories and come home with them and tell friends who were baby boomers and so forth, many of them would say to me, I can't wait to read this book because I need to figure out what I'm going to do.
Well, the threads, of course, and what you've done in your journey to finally narrow down a candidate list of 13 people and 13 rich stories, some of those common threads is where we want to go today. I know, for example, you had initially said to me that truly these are people that not only have done great things in the post-age 60 realm, but to get to even age 60, they lived through really difficult shifts and changes in their life.
Yeah, I mean, as we discussed last time, many of these people, all, practically all of them, faced dramatic adversity throughout their lives and had shifts both financial and emotional throughout their lives, and so did have complicated journeys just to get to age 60. Not only a couple of them had succeeded in ways that society might have viewed as significant, perhaps, before taking their journey into the second half of their life. Yesterday, I happened to go to a meeting of the Life Planning Network for New England in Boston, and was listening to a wonderful pioneer in the field whose name is Jan Hively, talking about the meaning of work. And it has really set my mind thinking about how these people and how we don't all have to do things that are book worthy to find truly purposeful and meaningful activity and work that is of value to our society and to ourselves.
Well, and in fact, interesting enough, timing is everything. Yesterday on the front page of your previous Hangout USA Today, the lead article on the front page was about the number of individuals that have shifted out of the for-profit world in this, you know, what, post-45, post-50 age group, and now doing significant leadership contributions in not-for-profits.
Yeah, and it's a critical shift that, you know, has to take place for a number of reasons. I mean, we have obviously changing economic conditions that are going to require continued employment for the boomer generation as there's a drop in rate and percent of retirement savings, and people have lost money and they have to live longer and support families later into life. So there are all sorts of reasons, personal reasons, but as a society, we really also, I think, need the boomer generation to shift into more of a leadership role. And I know I had mentioned to you that I'm very caught by the notion of generativity that Eric Erickson had framed, the idea that at a certain age we shift to establishing or guiding the next generation. And I've also been thinking about that a lot, about how this is really an act of creativity. Mm-hmm. And it's a creativity that's required between generations, not simply, I think one of the problems that comes up is one generation is that there is some intergenerational conflict that can emerge. There doesn't have to be. And I think that how we handle this is going to be critical for our futures.
Isn't it really true? So if there's one common thread that resonates through the 13 stories you've talked about here in your book, which for those of you who just turned in, the book is called What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life, is that this concept of generativity, I like that word, and people trying to do something to create change or improve society through their own particular passion. And so it's not necessarily something they go sign up for or post for or get recruited to do, but it's something that's kind of emerging right from their soul and their own life experiences, correct?
Yeah, I mean, so many of the stories have it embedded in them. And what you see, I'll give a couple of examples in a minute, but what actually seems to so often be the process is that people are driven by some internal passion or desire, mm-hmm. or just instinct to do something or feeling for something. But as they engage with others in doing it, and as they're affirmed in it, and they actually begin to experience the value of what they're doing, their interest and impact tends to widen. It's an outward spiral that occurs, and it's really quite amazing to watch. So, you know, one of my favorite examples in the book is Dana Dakin, who was a financial marketer. She was a feminist and something of a pioneer, and was one of the more overtly successful people in the book prior to turning 60. But she was really determined. She had met earlier in her life a woman named Olga Murray, who had been a lawyer on the California State Supreme Court, who had gone off to Nepal to hike in the Himalayas and had become injured there. And while she had to remain there, she saw what was needed for children in Nepal, and she came back and she began a project that has ended up helping thousands and thousands of Nepalese orphans. So Dana had received, in a sense, the torch from Olga a number of years earlier, and it had been burning in her brain that when she turned 60, she too wanted to do something that had social purpose and meaning. And she searched for quite a while. She couldn't really find what it was she wanted to do or hoped to do. And by coincidence, and it's so often the case, she met a woman at a art fair in New Hampshire who suggested to her that she read Muhammad Yunus's book on microfinance. And
right.
So that she ends up going off to Africa without really a plan in hand, just going off to meet a father of a personal trainer she knew in Ghana, and being taken to a village, Pokwasi, where she introduces her idea to the women. Now, 8 years later, 9 years later, the project she started, Women's Trust, is considered a model for Africa for microfinance and development. Just started, you know, with the funds from her used, the sale of her used Volvo. So,
Don Jalema, I think the other thing that caught my attention was this idea. You started telling us the story that she was searching and searching and searching, and yet really what happened was something came to her, not her to it.
That's true. I mean, I think it works both ways. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it doesn't come to you unless you put yourself out there. That's clear.
Right.
You need to act in some way. Having goals is of critical importance. How you frame those goals may be, you know, various. But I think, you know, taking some action, some steps. So Dana was always asking people, mm-hmm. What should I do? Where should I put my energies? And so she received a lot of input over the course of a year that she was actually asking, until the right idea did come to her. It's interesting in her case, as in many cases, something personal in her life that she couldn't expect is what also had thrust her into beginning.
Mm-hmm.
She was in a love relationship that she thought was the love of her life, and she ended up with heartbreak and disappointment at age 59 and went off to the bookstore to console herself, which is what she tends to do. And there she found a poem that was up on the wall by Jane Kenyon, which talked about the love between Jane Kenyon and her husband, Donald Hall. Jane Kenyon died at a very young age. And she learned that Jane Kenyon and Donald Hall had lived in a place called Wilmot Flat, or Wilmot, New Hampshire. And she said, that's the kind of love I want. And she decided, that she was going to go to Wilmot Flat and live. And it was in living in Wilmot Flat that she discovered the real value of community. And so that also became part of her frame of reference, because she watched what people in this small community were able to do when they bound together in terms of developing a community center and saving the post office and so forth.
And then she could use that and see how that power would bring to Africa. You know, for anyone who's really taken a leap of faith and, let's say, moved to a total different environment, you might think it's for reason X. But really, suddenly, in hindsight, different reasons, M, N, Q, and B, pop up. I can speak to that myself. Our move from the East Coast, your neck of the woods, out here to Tucson. Tucson has a phenomenal draw for people because of that heightened curiosity and then that mindful opportunity to kind of throw yourself out there. And it's such a blend of people that are in that space. So Dana's story, of course, shows that you said, you know, some of your precepts of curiosity and being a mindful goal setter as someone who is specifically just wedded to a given goal, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that notion of being a mindful goal setter is so important, because I think people sometimes set goals that are, you know, unrealistic or fantastic without really being their goals, their mm-hmm. goals that they assume that other people want them to have. But when you really, I think, develop goals that come out of your own values and are mindful in that way, they tend to bind with events. It just seems as if there's some force in the universe that causes that to happen. It's hard to explain, but I've seen it over and over again. I've seen it in my own life.
Sure. So this idea, you know, some of these common threads, and I hear you saying them about Dana's story in your book, about how she relied on that early and then continued affirmation from others being so important, that really then forced her to over time grow this probably much bigger than she ever imagined could start with.
Yeah, I mean, in Dana's story, I mean, she continues to learn and about what is needed. Initially, when she went off, of course, she had the vision of just creating a microfinance program that followed kind of the guidelines of Muhammad Yunus's work with the Grameen Bank. But when she actually began to develop it and began to work with the people in Pequossi and develop relationships with the people in Pequossi and be guided by and collaborate with the people in Pequossi, as well as the people back in New Hampshire who began to support her efforts, including nurse physicians and so forth, she realized that what was needed was not simply money. That what was needed was education for girls and ways of empowering women, and how to affect that wasn't simply by giving loans. In fact, that really turns out not to be the solution at all. But, and so the more the program has grown, the greater the collaboration has become, the wider the spread of it has become, the stronger it has become. So again, it's a kind of interesting paradigm in that we start out thinking of that we're going to do something for ourselves, but when we put out in the world and we work with other people and we collaborate, well, our goal tends to expand and our effect tends to expand way beyond what we could ever imagine.
I think your comment earlier about outward spirals, I mean, I look at just what, you know, you're having given birth to this book, what it's done for you. I mean, I'll take it real personally, just this radio show, that, you know, on one hand it was, gee, how can we get some exposure to the type of work that I do? But then you realize, no, this is about connecting others, opening up new venues, new conversations. I think the other thing you've said just inherent in your conversation about Dana is also at the same time she was doing things and delivering things, she also had to stay very grounded in being process oriented, right? Because this is about sustaining things.
Absolutely. I mean, it's critical in Dana's story. It's critical in many of the stories. I, you know, have also mentioned the stories of Barbara and Ira Smith, who started something called Household Goods Recycling of Massachusetts. It used to be called Household Goods Recycling Ministry, but they really didn't want it to have a religious connotation. And, you know, they've built this wonderful project that started out of their garage, started on their driveway, where people started donating things. Initially, there was a refugee from El Salvador that they were trying to help and had just simply put a letter in the church, local church newsletter, asking people to deliver some goods so they could help supply a apartment for her when she came as a political refugee. So many people delivered goods that they had more to give, and it became an evolving process. They carried it on their backs for about 10 years.
Both literally and figuratively, right? Because they actually did all the moving. And then now today they provide donated goods to some countless number of other agencies that are dispersing them, right?
That's correct. Over 500 agencies in the offices of agencies in the Boston suburban area.
Isn't that wonderful?
And
that's
over
right.
$1 million a year of goods that goes out to people. And, you know, the thing is that Ira was an electrical engineer for Raytheon and had worked in missile programs and had work-related depression because he really wasn't happy doing what he did.
And so then you see that opportunity. Well, Bruce, thank you so much. I want to direct our listeners. You can pick up further on the story of Dana, Barbara and Ira Smith, and others in his book, What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life? True Stories of Finding Success, Passion, and New Meaning in the Second Half of Life. I'll point you to Bruce's website as well. It's Bruce Frankel, FRANKEL.net. To read about the book and other blogging information that Bruce is going to join us once a month and expand our view. Bruce, thanks a lot for joining us today. day and enjoy that snow scene that you got there in Massachusetts.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's a great pleasure. Have a great day out there.
Thank you very much.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.